Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Nice to have you with us today. You can watch today's broadcast by going to Progressive Radio Network on Facebook. Also, we have a new number if you'd like to listen to the show live anywhere in North America and Canada, which is part of that. Write this number down, 515-605-9429. 515-605-9429. And the reason that I have that new number is because we have so many people listening now that all the other numbers are full, so people are not able to get on. So I want you to have a chance to hear this. Also today, I'm going to begin a series of video clips that highlight the plight of people living in countries like Honduras or El Salvador and why their conditions there are so inhumane. They've been forced to leave the country to migrate to the United States. Therefore, before we judge them, before we criticize or condemn them, let us first at least understand why they're coming. And this notion that they're all coming because they want to absorb themselves into our welfare system is simply not true. We also hold previous administrations, both Republican and Democrat, responsible for the chaos in their countries that have led to this. And the media is not discussing this at all. We will. Also today, what if plastic was never invented? Now, this is an interesting clip. It's a short clip, but it gives you some pros and cons. And with each of these clips that I play today, six, hopefully, call in and give us your opinion, your thoughts on our talkback line. That line is 888-874-4888. Also today, are we allowed to ban nature? Very interesting, heady commentary. Then from Fox News, a program every night called Kennedy, she is taking on Medicare for All and why it would cost about $3 trillion to the American taxpayer. She lays out her argument, and she uses both a conservative and a liberal think tank that lays out the figures. I will challenge them. I believe that this is the danger of being on a media platform where people may trust your judgment, but you're not engaged in any scholarship. You're not looking for the truth. You're simply looking to share a particular point of view based upon your ideology. And then a call of the forest. This is a short clip, 5-minute clip, of a forest in Japan where people go to tree breathe, where millions of people go, and they just go in there to breathe. And you think, well, why? Why can't they go to the ocean and breathe, or in the cities and breathe? This will explain it. Information you've never heard before. And if you're watching it, it's a wonderful, vivid, lush presentation. Also, if time permits today, The Permanent Lie, Our Deadliest Threat, from Chris Hedges, a commentary. I didn't get to it yesterday. And Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, I will get to this one because it's a shorter one. The United States is the Only Remaining Colonial Power, by Professor Paul Craig Roberts, a man who I have a lot of respect for. So let's begin. First, there's a simple herb. It's called sage. S-A-G-E. And now, according to the University of Salerno, which is in Italy, and published in the British Journal of Pharmacology, it is able to have very strong anti-inflammatory properties. Now, let's put this into a little more humane context. When you travel to many countries in the world, from Jamaica and Trinidad, where it's very common to find 10, 15, or 20 different varieties of fruits growing in a person's backyard or the immediate vicinity near them, they'll go out and pick a soursop. They'll pick the leaves. They'll use the whole fruit because they know from their experience that it helps people who have inflammation and cancers. The cherimoya also is used for digestive problems. Aloe vera is used. But in the United States, we don't think of food as a medicine. It's not how our minds are conditioned. In fact, Richard Gale, our scholar in residence, and I were working late last night and early this morning on a new article. If all goes well, I'll present it tomorrow. And this is a very in-depth article. It's a very, very heady article. It's about Wikipedia. It's about a group of people called skeptics who have incubated themselves within the internal bowels of Wikipedia. So when you go to look for something on health or medicine, if they don't like it, they will alter it, and you can't change it, which goes against Wikipedia's own information. So the question is, and a friend of mine, Steve Brown, raised this question yesterday in a conversation, can we trust Wikipedia? Are they honest? Are they objective? Are they fair-minded? They say they have no paid editors. Well, then how do these people get in there, and you can't get rid of them? They're fully embedded. And what happens when you can show that the information you have is honest and the information they have is not? And there's no mechanisms to change this. Well, that's why we're doing a series of about 50 articles. We've done six. Tomorrow will be seventh. And tomorrow will be I'm not going to tell you what it is because I don't want to forewarn them because they listen to this show. But I want to tell you that this is one of those quantum intellectual plays, that's all I'll say, that we intend to show how lacking in qualification and lacking in understanding they are of nature. And now you'll listen, hopefully, to the whole commentary tomorrow. But in any case, when we were having this discussion about the approach that we're going to take, one of the things came up was that, and this I will tell you, that nature and its realities always supersedes scientific verification and validation. And as one example is that there's a document, not a document, it's just a little few-minute film that some people took, two young guys, and they wanted to see what would happen with a homeless person. And they walked by and dropped their wallet, and this guy said, "Hey, you dropped your wallet." So he went over, this homeless guy sitting outside this store, and he picked up the wallet, looked in it, saw there was money, and then went over and gave it to the guy. And that was all. And the guy said, "Well, here, thank you. Here's $100. And first, it's the expression on this guy's face who's homeless. He suddenly has $100. Wow. So they leave, and the homeless guy doesn't know they've gone across the street and they're filming him from a van. He goes in the store, and it's one of these stores that has a liquor store and other food in it, and he's in there about 10 minutes, and then he comes back out, and he's got all these bags in a cart, and he goes across the street where there's a little park of homeless people, and he goes around giving out bags of food, the whole $100. Wow. And you look at that and you think, does that not touch you, watching that? Of course it does. Every day on my Facebook page, I post animals, showing animals hugging. Last night I posted one where this dog hugs the other dog, literally puts his arms around him, hugs him, gives him kisses, because it was an abandoned dog and was shy, and this other dog just brings him back to life. But there were about 15 other animal stories on there showing animals loving other animals and loving humans, and especially an autistic boy that his dog brought him out of his autism, where all the medicines and all the classes, the mother said, "I took him to every therapy imaginable, and here's this dog, and now the dog gets with him, and he does all these things that he didn't do before." In any case, when you watch these things, I post them for a reason, to have you feel to give you confidence that if you're having a bad day, there's good things going on in the world, and it can happen to you. That we all go through rough times, but we all feel something. Now, that's called the placebo effect, which means that our belief in something can have measurable quantitative outcomes. Healing is one of them. And nobo is the opposite, which means that if you have negative feelings and negative behavior, if you live with fear, insecurity, uncertainty, your whole biochemistry, every second that you're in that mindset, is going to be working against you, promoting disease. So at any given moment in our lives, we're either promoting wellness or disease. Now, ask one of these skeptics, how does a person have a good biochemistry when they see a film where there's love shared and we're all thrilled when there's a rescue? And they'll say, well, there's nothing there. We'll say, yeah, there is. I felt it. Well, don't trust your feelings. Yeah, we do trust our feelings. Every mother knows in their children when they're being honest, when they're not, when they're communicating what they're feeling, when they're not. They know they're in rhythm with that child. They'll say, that doesn't exist. Every mother in the world knows it does. We are all hardwired at the spiritual level to feel empathy and compassion and selflessness. I can show you films where animals will feed each other before they feed themselves. They'll say, that's random and not reproducible. They're wrong. So here we've had so many of our decisions in life guided by people who have gross bias, refuse to acknowledge the spiritual, refuse to acknowledge the ethereal, refuse to acknowledge the soul, refuse to acknowledge that there's any deeper, meaningful, quantitative, and quantum energy within us, that we're not connected, that we're not all one. We're all just pieces of atoms. And therefore, they've managed to do something remarkable. And the New York Times and its medical writers and the Washington Post and the Journal of the American Medical Association and all of the scientific community and all the medical community, all the nurses, everyone combined has accepted that all we are is just living pathologies. And they've missed the whole essence of reality. And that's why they've failed miserably at understanding things like love and its role in health, happiness, and its role in longevity. There was a little book written called Happy People Don't Get Cancer. It was one of the very first books I read when I came to New York City on health. And people might have thrown it off saying it's irrelevant. No, it's not. Now we can actually get neuroscientists showing us that every thought we have has an outcome, positive or negative. So why should we allow a tiny little group of people who don't believe in herbs, don't believe in vitamins, don't believe in diet? In fact, it's so bad that if you decided that you did not want this year to take a flu shot, but instead you had listened to this show and you wanted to build up your immune systems, therefore you were taking vitamin D3, maybe 5,000 units a day or more, the omega-3 fatty acids, 2,000 milligrams a day or more. Maybe you were taking more fruits and vegetables, more juices, more chlorophyll, and you were also taking a lot more vitamin C and quercetin and astragalus and echinacea, and you were not eating sugars and meat and refined carbohydrates, and you were meditating, you were getting a good night's sleep and exercising, because that you knew that that will build natural immunity. And the science proves that. And they would say, if you didn't get the flu shot and you didn't get the flu, none of what you just did mattered. But if you did all that I just mentioned, and you took the flu shot and you did not get the flu, it was because the flu shot. Now, there's no science to substantiate that. And yet they're considered the final arbiters of all that's right in science. That's how perverted, that's how misguided science, medicine, healing, and public health policy has become. The entire medical industrial scientific complex today has about as much legitimacy in what it provides people as if you were going into a public bathroom with had a broken flusher and you took a cup of water and tried to find the clean water in a dirty toilet bowl. That's what I think of science, medicine, and the entire medical industrial health complex. It is a fraud, a deadly one, because it's not just being wrong and not acknowledging intuition, love, joy, happiness, having any relevance to the body. Remember what I said, nature always has a reality to which science may or may not catch up and understand it. And the fact that science hasn't discovered something yet, how something works, like placebo, they don't know. They know it exists. There are hundreds of studies showing it works. And nocebo, same thing. They just don't understand the mechanism. Because they don't understand it, they discard it. They believe the only way to health is through medicines, the medical model, nothing else. Wow. To me, my personal feeling, that's fascism in healthcare, and that's the only system we have today at every level. So when we come back to this University of Salerno in Italy and SAGE turning off pain and inflammation in the body, now Gwenda Holmes in Italy and in Sicily and ask them, what do you do to keep yourself healthy? And they'll smile, and they'll go over, and they'll open up bags or jars, and they'll show you all forms of herbs, including sage and oregano. And they'll show you olives and olive oil, and they'll show you bee propolis and raw honey. They have all this there. If you were in India, they would show you at least 100 different herbs, including cayenne and turmeric. Each country you go to, they would show you different things that they don't even talk about. It's just accepted. You go to Japan and China, it's fermented foods. Korea is pickled foods. So, what I'm suggesting then is that in America, we don't have those jars. We don't have that folk knowledge. We're just living in this vacuous idea that as long as we see it on television and eat it, it can't be bad. And if something happens, we rush out to the drugstore and get an over-the-counter drug or a prescription drug. There's a lot to learn, more than just sage. This is from Georgetown University Medical Center, and it talks about resveratrol. Now, you know resveratrol comes from grapes, also from blueberries, and they found it in wine, only about 5 milligrams. It's still there. And the fact that people who drank red wine in these countries have less heart failure and congestive heart failure and heart attacks and strokes is good, but had they just eaten the grapes, they would have gotten more, and had they drank a glass of grape juice, they would have gotten 5 times more, and if you took a 100 milligram resveratrol tablet, you get as much as if you had drank a whole case of wine. So, no matter how you get it, it's good. Why? Because resveratrol, quote, given to Alzheimer's patients appeared to restore the integrity of the blood-brain barrier, reducing the ability of harmful immune molecules secreted by immune cells to infiltrate from the body into the brain tissues. That's according to this Georgetown University Medical Center. Quote, the reduction in neuronal inflammation slowed the cognitive decline of patients compared to a matching group of placebo-treated patients with this disorder. Okay, good news. Now, this is today. 7 years ago, with a health support group of 26 individuals who had brain disorders, we were having people take 300 milligrams of resveratrol a day. They were taking a lot of other things beyond that, and every single condition that they came with was improved or in some cases completely reversed. One of those, a nice guy named Kenny, had end-stage multiple sclerosis and couldn't walk straight and had no muscle. He was putting ramps in his house, according to his doctors, to get ready for the end. Well, Kenny has been lesion-free and multiple sclerosis diagnosed-free for 10 years. Now, let the skeptics say that was a placebo, and I'm going to say, okay, You think it was a placebo. Not all the things he did every day, taking 13 glasses of vegetable juice, chelation therapy, intravenous vitamin C, none of that had anything to do with it, right? Then show me another human being on the planet that has had their end-stage multiple sclerosis reversed. Just one. That's all. Give me one. Give me one person at Sloan Kettering that had end-stage, stage 4 lung cancer B, with going into hospice care at the hospital that reversed it. And it's cancer-free. Just one. Oh, you can't? Well, okay. We can. This is from University of Pittsburgh, and it says, social media use associated with depression among young adults. Quote, the more time young adults use social media, the more likely they are to be depressed. This was published through the National Institutes of Health in the journal Depression and Anxiety. The findings could guide clinical and public health interventions to tackle depression. This was the first large national representative study to examine associations between the use of broad-range social media outlets and depression. So, the bottom line? If you want to talk with someone, talk with them face-to-face. You want to enjoy someone's company? Go out and enjoy someone's company and leave your cell phone behind. This past Sunday, I went for a walk in the museums, which I love to do in New York. New York has so many wonderful places to go to relax, and I like the Frederick Church and Thomas Cole Hudson Valley paintings over at the museum in the American Wing. Every single person in there when I was there was watching social media. Nobody was looking up or absorbing any of the understanding of the paintings. So turn off social media. And also, for those of you going out on dates or with friends, don't take your phone for one reason only. Respect for the people and their time. If someone's given you the benefit of their time and their presence, honor that so you can look with each other and not wait. Oh, when their phone rings 8 times. And by the way, I went out with someone about 3 years ago, in under 2 hours, this person took 22 calls. Not once said, I'm having dinner, I'll call you back. And they wonder why I never invited them back to dinner. I would never think of taking a cell phone anywhere where other people are. It's disrespectful, manners. Finally, from Duke University, vitamin D levels predict the risk of brain decline in this elderly population. And it shows that if you have low levels of vitamin D, you are far more likely to age your brain prematurely. So vitamin D from the sun, great. But most people don't get enough sun. Sunblock blocks vitamin D. So instead, make sure you're taking vitamin D each day, anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 units a day. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 24 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going directly into this Kennedy on Medicare for All. It's only 2 minutes long. She's opposed to it, and she gives you her rationale, which is fine. And I'm going to challenge her. And if you wish to challenge on her behalf or not, feel free to do so at 888-874-4888. Back in a moment.
Senator Bernie Sanders is well-intentioned when he talks about the urgency in passing his Medicare for All bill, but the commie red blood that pulses through his good heart betrays this impossible plan that is nothing more than an expensive statist pipe dream. It's more like a pipe bomb that would blow up the economy with long-term irreversible damage. As we well know, you can't unring the bell of entitlement. The freedom-focused Mercatus Center did something Senator Sanders' office has not. They actually ran a cost-benefit analysis and found this sicko socialism would cost roughly $32.6 trillion over 10 years. Even if you doubled tax collections from individuals and corporations, yes, that means you'd be paying twice what you already do in taxes, that still doesn't cover the tab. My God, free health care is expensive. Sanders derided the findings as illegitimate and, quote, grossly misleading and biased because the Koch brothers have supported Mercatus in the past. So let's compare that study with the same analysis from a different, more left-leaning, Sanders-esque outfit, the Urban Institute. They came up with a vastly different projection, estimating the plan would only cost $32 trillion over 10 years. Oh, you mean it's the exact same malignant tumor no matter how you dissect it? Gee, it's odd how math works. Senator Sanders should pull his head out of his own dark utopian cavern and fiddle with an abacus once in a while. We know single payer doesn't work by turning to our sad veterans whose monolithic care was so cruelly rationed and withheld, many wilted and died waiting for treatment. And this was to a group of people who've served, many of whom fought for freedom, yet the government punched them in the sack while they waited in vain. Imagine how poorly the truly marginalized will be treated, to whom the country owes no debt, yet generations will slowly go in debt as grandma, innovation, and a once succulent talent pool are all left to die on the side of the road to single payer so Bernie Sanders can indulge his Scandinavia fetish. No, thank you. That's the memo.
Okay. Fine, you've made your points. I'd like to address them. First, you condemn socialism. Be careful, because if you condemn socialism, that socialism is what provides public schools to all the people. I went to a public school. Almost everyone I knew went to either public school or Catholic school growing up, and we got a fine education with wonderful teachers. And today we're blessed to have a lot of very good teachers in public schools. A lot of those schools are being denied the funding they require, and private schools are taking the place. The type of private schools and charter schools that you would support and the Koch brothers support and Obama supported and Bush supported and Hillary Clinton supported and Trump supports, the last person who was in president of the United States that really supported public education and public schools was Lyndon Johnson, John F. Kennedy, and Jimmy Carter. And that should be free, and could be, and was, outside of books and simple things like that, supplies. Your fire department, that's socialism. Your Coast Guard, that's socialism. When you have an accident and an ambulance comes and clears up the mess, that's socialism. Your police department, that's socialism. So imagine what would happen if you privatized, and it's been done in some areas, the fire department. So if you didn't have that insurance, that private insurance, based upon the free market profiteering off a disaster, your house would burn down. It actually did in one state where the fire department watched the house burn down instead of doing the right and ethical thing. Even if they were working for a for-profit fire department, they should have just on ethical grounds gone in and stopped the fire. Now you condemn Sweden. Now, Sweden's going through a challenge right now, not because of Islam, that's a red herring, but because of not working with people coming in, vetting them properly to see is there the ability to integrate different cultural values into a society. And in some cases, it works beautifully. In other cases, it does not. That's not about a religion now. They've tried to make it that. It's about a system. But take that away from the equation and ask yourself, why is it that Norway and Denmark and Sweden and Switzerland and Finland are among the longest-lived people in the world and have what is called, on the scale of quality of happiness in life, they're at the top. And we in the United States are nowhere near that. Do they pay more taxes? Absolutely. In some cases, they pay as much as 60%. And now, will they have to change their system? They'll have to alter it because so many older people are retiring and so few young people are in the system. So at a certain point, the structure of the system must change in order to evolve a new way of continuing those services that are necessary for people. But do not condemn a system that has worked so well, that offers free health care, and that allows people to pay with their taxes. They choose that. Now, right now in the United States, depending upon the state you live in, like New York and New Jersey and California, you're paying a lot of personal taxes. And then look at the quality of medical care. It's abysmal. And an operation in the United States might cost you $80,000, and in one of those countries is free. In fact, we are the only country in the developed world, first world countries, that does not have universal health care. But then you say that you're reciting two reports, one from conservative group, one from liberal group, showing that it would bankrupt us. It could, done where you keep the profit in the system. That's what you're leaving out of your argument. That's where your lack of scholarship. That's where your lack of depth of intellectual thinking. That's where you don't understand what you're talking about. What we just heard you do is a ideological rant. Easy to do. Sean Hannity does it every night. Laura Ingraham and others. Very self-righteous, but not right in most cases. Let me break this down for you. Contact my office. I will show you that if you took the profit out of medicine and gave doctors a good living, paid for their education completely, took away malpractice, so you had universal no-fault malpractice, so there was no defensive medicine, $200 billion, where doctors didn't have to buy liability insurance, that in some cases they actually gave up the practice of medicine because they couldn't afford the insurance, where they're spending as little as 7 minutes with a patient and under 11 seconds of patients talking before they interrupt them, where you change the curriculum in medical schools to represent what is the real cause of disease, including the body, mind, and spiritual evaluations to the person, as well as environmental concerns and epigenetics and prevention, which does not exist in any medical school curriculum now. And nutrition is 1 hour. They're functionally illiterate. Everything is pharmacology. That's the profit motive. Then you give them a proper education, as Hippocrates would have, or Maimonides would have, or Galen would have, so they understand what a person is going to experience and what the likely outcome of that would be. Then they had come out of medical school. They don't have to go through this torturous and completely barbaric internship where they have to work 30 hours at a time. Do you want someone working on your brain as an intern or resident who hasn't been to bed in a day and a half? I wouldn't. So you do it properly. Then they have no debt. They're not under pressure. They're not going to be an unnecessary test. And have every hospital be a nonprofit hospital. Everybody will make a nice salary. Everybody will have health benefits. Everybody will have a good place to work, a good environment. And then you put those in every city in America, in every neighborhood. You have clinics. Now, take the insurance industry, one of the most vile, corrupt industries in the world, and the most powerful when it comes to Obamacare, which is utterly corrupt system, and they're the ones who benefit because they wrote the laws. They wrote Obamacare. And you eliminate them and you've eliminated $1.1 trillion per year. So when you see what you save by taking all these other unnecessary expenses and profiteering out and the cost of drugs, it's insane. Bill Falloon at Life Extension met with me to do a film shoot. And he had done something, and he gets the credit for it. He had looked deeply with his investigating team, and they found the actual generic cost of the 10 top-selling drugs in the United States, meaning what would a 30-day supply of a drug, if it were generic and not a brand name, cost a person. And they were 8 cents, 10 cents. Expensive drug was 20 cents a month. Some of those were selling for $400. You're talking about 3,000% markup up to a 500,000% markup. That's why it's the most powerful industry in the world. That's why your top pharmaceutical companies make more profit than all the other Fortune 500 companies combined. So you no longer allow any drugs to be purchased, at least in hospitals, for VA, Medicare, and Medicaid, except at the generic cost. You'll save another $300 billion. So gee whiz, we got rid of the insurance issue, also the fraud, which is rampant, over $300 billion. You wouldn't have that fraud. You wouldn't have the billing. You wouldn't have the administrative cost. You wouldn't have the excessive medical procedure cost. Well, you just saved $1,725 billion a year. That means that not only would universal health care and Medicaid for all be self-funding, at the end of 10 years, we will have saved over $20 trillion. So this is the downside of being a broadcaster with a strong personality and a strong opinion. That's your business. Who doesn't know how to do research or chooses not to do research? You wrap your ideology around your brain and somehow think you're informed. You're not. The people in MSNBC are not. The people at NPR are not. The people at Fox are not. So if you want to know exactly how to do this, I have it all written out. I have it all explained. All my data is I would be able to testify before Congress tomorrow and show how we could do this and save trillions of dollars and all those lives. Just a thought. Now, I'm going to share another clip with you right now. I think you'll find this of interest. This is about plastic. What if we never had plastic in our lives? It's only 3 minutes long, and it gives you the pros and cons, but more the pros than the cons, in my opinion. But you can address this for yourself. You heard how I just addressed one person. We invite alternative voices. We invite people who have different ideologies on this program so you can have a chance to hear them. This is one of them. Please listen in.
What if we never invented this? Plastic. Once a revolutionary invention, it's now filling up our oceans and killing thousands of whales, birds, turtles. Just how much plastic do we have around us? Would our life be less comfortable without it? How many animal species could we save by getting rid of plastic debris? This is What If, and here's what would happen if plastic was never invented. Your plastic bag is actually chemically processed natural gas or oil. You can tear it or burn it or throw it away when you're done with it, but it won't decompose the way this loaf of bread will. Since the 1950s, we've created 6.3 billion tons of plastic. 9% of it we've recycled, another 12% incinerated. That leaves us with 4.9 billion tons of plastic waste. If we could gather it all in one place, this plastic mountain would be bigger than Mount Everest. A lot of this waste ends up in the sea, killing marine animals who mistake this indigestible synthetic for food. If we eliminated plastic from our lives, we'd save hundreds of marine species from entanglement and plastic ingestion. But what about us? What would our routine be like without plastic? How much do we depend on plastic anyway? Even if you avoided using plastic containers to bring your lunch to work or bagged your groceries with reusable shopping bags, you'd still be a far cry from going absolutely plastic-free. Plastic is everywhere. Aluminum cans are lined with plastic resin. Without it, your cola would corrode it within 3 days. Paper cups hide a thin layer of plastic too. How do you think they keep the liquid inside? No plastic would also mean no tea bags, since they're heat-sealed with polyethylene. Without plastic, grocery shopping would look very different. Our liquids would come in glass bottles, our meats and cheese would be wrapped in paper, you'd pack all your groceries in paper bags or cardboard boxes. One of the main benefits of plastic packaging is that it keeps food fresh longer. Without this basic method of food preservation, a lot of our food would need to be raised or grown locally, and much of it would only be available seasonally. Organic waste would fill up the landfills and become our main environmental concern. Our clothing would be limited to natural fibers. No polyester socks, nylon dresses, or acrylic sweaters. Say goodbye to your fleece jacket. heat and water-resistant safety wear wouldn't exist either. Without the plastic needed for electrical insulation, there would be no inexpensive circuits to build your phone or computer. Even early electronics in the 1910s used one of the first plastics, Bakelite. Without any plastic, we'd be stuck in 1870, still using non-durable and hazardous lacquer and rubber to insulate our wires. All the progress we've made with affordable electronics would never have happened. But at least we wouldn't be polluting the earth with disposable coffee cups, water bottles, toothbrushes, and other plastic stuff. And 700 marine species wouldn't be affected by plastic debris. If the thought of someone taking your plastic away doesn't ruin your day, consider moving to Kenya or Bangladesh, where it's illegal to use plastic bags. And you might consider getting some of these slimy pets. 6,000 waxworms can eat up a plastic bag in just 1 hour. Are you trying to get plastic out of your life? Share your thoughts in the comments below. And keep challenging us with new...
Okay. It was a well-done short piece. And he tried to be, I feel, somewhat objective. Here's what he left out of the equation. For those of us who are in the slow movement, slow food movement, and slow living movement, slowing everything down, and want to live a more authentically natural and clean life, clean in the larger context of clean food, clean air, clean water, and cleaning up our soil, then just going from plastic bags to paper bags will not be enough. We just have a great accumulation of plastic in the ocean. In fact, we have plastic in the ocean at such a level that it's 3 times the size of Texas. Here's what we should be doing. Here's what we could do. First, we should look for locally grown produce in season. Now, he may not be aware of drying, but we have inexpensive, even solar dryers that you could use to dry food when the season's over. So you could have dried apple, dried strawberry, dried peaches, dried tomatoes, dried string beans, dried broccoli, dried squash 12 months a year. All you have to do is simply take it from its dried position and put it into water, and you've rehydrated it. And it's still fresh and still loaded with nutrients. Also, it's better for the environment to have something that's grown locally in season because the carbon footprint is substantially reduced. I'd rather lower the footprint by having the carbon by having a locally grown baked potato or potato I can bake that uses 90 gallons of water than having a hamburger, a quarter pounder, where the meat was raised in Brazil, brought into Texas, and then taken to a stockyard, slaughtered there, and then shipped over and then made into a hamburger because you have about 8,000 miles of traveling causing carbon from all those transportation mechanisms, and then also the industrialization of that farm and the abuse of that animal. So therefore, you become more humane. You start to look at all creatures as sentient creatures and not just as your next meal. So by going local, going vegan, you become more conscious of the presence of a living energy and a force behind that. Also, we have now the capacity to freeze dry. And this is a big movement, and it's gaining, not in the cities, but in rural America, where you can take food, freeze dry it, and now they have a biodegradable plastic bags, and you can store that food for 30 years. And that's what a lot of people are looking forward to any disaster in the future and how they can prepare for that so they're not left without resources they need for sustaining life. Freeze-drying is the future. And you can buy a freeze dryer for about $6,000. And you can dry enough food to last you and your family probably the next 30 years. So you see, he's not looking at all the solutions we have. Also, we should have a Marshall Plan where every country in the world, but especially the ones that pollute the most, which, by the way, is not the United States. Our U.S. military is the number one polluter in the world. But if you took the number one country, it's clearly China, and then India and Brazil. And the United States is further down, by the way. And we should have a Marshall Plan to put all of our great minds together and come up with technologies that can go into the ocean and bring out all that debris, recycle it back into usable material, including bringing it back and recycling it into, instead of concrete, replacing concrete, which is finite. We're running out of sand to make concrete and to make roads out of that recycled beads that then will stay there and can be used. And then you insert your you insert your coils in there, and you insert your solar panels in there, and then you have roads and streets that are lit at night and warmed during the winter so that you don't have the snow and ice. You see, that's where we're going. That's where some countries already are. We're just not paying attention. It's not important to us. But I also recognize that he mentioned computers. Oh, you wouldn't have your computers. You wouldn't have your cell phones. No, he didn't say computers. He said cell phones. Well, all of our devices are made from petroleum-based products. So if you want to wean us off these old fossil fuels, energy sources, which were necessary at one point but not today, then why don't we have a built into the price of every product a product renewable and recyclable program where you can't buy a computer or a cell phone or any other product that you're going to use that will not biodegrade unless it is returned to a recycling site that will biodegrade it down. If you do that, where you're paying for it and it's part of the law, then there would be in every community cell phone recycling, computer recycling. And they wouldn't be all shipped off to China where they're putting these massive graveyards for the where kids and poor people go in there and try to salvage and, you know, cannibalize any of the parts and then sell it. It would be a part of the structure. So you build into it the structure. And you only have biodegradable bags, not regular plastic bags, in all stores. So there's a lot we can do, but it takes consciousness to do it. Those are my thoughts. Let's say hello to Jeff from New Jersey. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Your thoughts, please.
How are you doing, Gary? Listening to the rant about a young lady, she left something really important. Now, we already spend about $3 trillion a year on
healthcare. 3.3.
Right. So in 10 years, what would it be?
6 trillion.
In 10 years, it'd be 33 trillion dollars? And her figures were talking about $34 trillion?
No. You're not adding on the increase of about 14 to 15% per year. So you can't take $3 trillion per year and multiply times 10 and come up with $30 trillion. You have to take 3.3 this year, 3.6 next year, $4 trillion the year after. You see, so you're up around closer to $40 trillion in 10 years.
Right. So her numbers, even though she's given them with universal health care, still fall short of what we would be currently spending if we didn't change at all.
That's correct.
So,
remember, she supports the globalized concept of laissez-faire, meaning let the market dictate. And we've seen the only thing the market has dictated in the last 40 years is the elimination of competition and monopolies and no accountability and deregulation where there should be and excessive profit-taking everywhere.
Right. So our argument is really, really actually on the weak side, because even if you just took the ability of the government to negotiate, like you said, to generic drugs, we would save, you know, that would knock the number down probably $10 to $12 trillion over those 10 years. If we did the simplest things, our argument can be easily debunked.
It wouldn't be $10 trillion. It'd be around $3 trillion. If you took out the insurance in 10 years, you've just saved around $10 to $12 trillion right there. In the drugs, you're looking at about another $3 trillion. But these are numbers they're not dealing with. Remember, you're asking her and her network and the people supporting that network to not allow the pharmaceutical industry to gouge as much profit as they can. Their whole construct is based upon profiteering at someone else's cost. Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate your input. You made some valid points. And now, something from the past. I found this the other day, and I just thought you might find it a little interesting. This is a review of my restaurant at the time, years ago, back in the 1990s, 91, 92, 93, called Gary's Place. It was over on Columbus Avenue, and thousands of you visited it. And I would do all the cooking on Wednesday nights. I only offered two entrees, but I did everything myself. And I wanted each dish to be a treasure not just in good nutrition, but also in its presentation. So I made some wonderful dishes. People would bring cameras and take pictures. But then I said, why don't we bring children into vegan restaurants? And the feedback was, well, they don't like vegetables. And so I want to show you a clip from one of the networks that came there with a child to see whether or not the child would like the food. So let's watch this. I think you'll find it fun.
Who is poised to revolutionize the kiddie menu? He's Gary Null, and he's this week's Bright Idea.
The good food debate has been raging for ages. Ask any parent or child and they'll tell you that there are two kinds of good food. Food that tastes good and food that's actually good for you. And the two don't cross paths all that often.
Dr. Gary Null is one man who has set out to change that. A syndicated radio host, author, and leading authority on health and nutrition, Null opened an organic New York City restaurant with something special in store for the kiddies.
When you see people walk in the door with kids that are bouncing off the wall, I don't want to eat this, I don't want to eat that, and you go over and you say, what would you like? I want a hamburger. We go back and we bring out something, and they chew it, and I say, well, how'd you like the hamburger? It was good. Do you want to try a vegetable burger? No, no. And I say, well, that was a vegetable burger. And they go, really? These big eyes, and they, really? Yeah. And next time in, they ask for the vegetable burger.
The Upper West Side Organic Eatery already attracts big celebrities like Claudia Schiffer, Keanu Reeves, Carol Burnett, and Yoko Ono. But Null has gone to great lengths to attract the little people.
We spend a lot of time creating menus that you can't find in any restaurant in America. And these are what, when your kid leaves here, they'll be full but healthier.
In creating the menu, Dr. Null threw his own lively definition into the good food debate.
If it's live, eat it. So all of your vegetables, all of your fruits and herbs, grains and nuts and seeds and legumes, those are what we should be consuming. And look at the difference in a child that does consume those and a child that eats a highly processed, highly adulterated American diet. One is bouncing off the walls, the other is just focused, energized, and happy.
Working with Chef Perry Sands, Null thinks he's accomplished his goal.
My biggest challenge was trying to make healthy food tastes as good as junk food, and I did.
But there's only one real way to know for sure, so we recruited 4-year-old food critic Isabel and her dad, Gary Habib.
She only likes a few things: hot dogs, macaroni and cheese.
Broccoli. Boy, Dad was in for a pleasant surprise.
What do you think?
Good.
It's good and it's broccoli?
It's good.
And you know what? It's good for you.
I know. Good.
There's no sugar in that, Gary.
Good.
As a dad, are you surprised by anything that went on at this table?
She's never touched broccoli in her life.
Which may have had more to do with clever presentation than health.
That looks like a car.
Yes.
It's a banana car.
Either way, you win some, and you win some. Lauren Bright for In Food Today.
So that was 25 years ago. 25 years ago. Little piece of history. I really enjoyed that. And the day may come when I may do another gourmet vegan restaurant. It's just right now the rents are too high, and they'll come down in the future once we had another bubble and burst. But it just reminds me that every restaurant in America should have a healthy children's menu. And if anyone watching or listening right now owns a restaurant, doesn't know how to do that, I'd be happy to share that with you. I would be happy to give you some recipes. I have over 2,400 original recipes I've created that go into my different cookbooks and in the restaurants that I've owned. And that way kids can have something healthy and tasty. And or people at home. In fact, what I'll do, I'll post some of these on PRN.FM or Progressive Radio Network's website for people who would just don't own a restaurant but like to feed their kids healthier. But I'll go into these other commentaries tomorrow. First thing, I'm going to deal with the one with Chris Hedges because I think it's so insightful. But you all have a nice day. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll